Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wicked Week here at Darkcast Network. I'm Jackie Maranti, host and producer of Cause of Death, 100 Seconds to Midnight. And I'm going to be your host for today's episode of Darkcast Network's Wicked Week. As sure as coffee shops are serving up some pumpkin spice everything, Darkcast Network loves spooky season. The topic today is Monster Mash, stories of cryptids. So grab someone to cuddle up with and take a listen.
We're going to get into the most relatable cryptid, you know. I don't know. I really relate with this guy. You know, I get it. Squonk.
I do not relate.
You do not relate? You've never felt self-conscious?
I mean, maybe a little, but not really, no.
Well,
maybe like when I was a teenager, when everybody does.
Well, anyway, everybody but Jordan at some point has felt
everybody
self-conscious.
Everybody but Jordan, no. If we're at some point, just to the extent of this guy, okay?
He is a little dramatic, I guess. Everyone's felt a little self-conscious about the way they look, but the squonk takes it to the next level. The squonk is a folkloric creature said to live in the Hemlock Forest of northern Pennsylvania. Damn old hemlock. Legends of squonks originated in the late 19th century during a period of Pennsylvania's history when timber and hunting industries were of the utmost importance. The legend states that a creature's skin is loose and ill-fitting and covered in warts and moles. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm like, so this is 37. Like, I get it. Just, I get it.
My skin's getting kind of loose.
I'm telling you right now, you can't avoid it. It's good. The alternative is death.
That's true. I'm fine.
Yeah, it's fine to be a little squonkish sometimes. The thing that isn't fine is how the squonk handles his outward appearance. Because I'd venture to guess that the squonk is a really nice dude. Like,
maybe.
I think they're really nice.
Probably
they sound
got a great
really
personality.
Nice. Yeah. And like, just, they don't even give themselves a chance. They don't even try.
No.
Well, the first written account of the squonk was from the 1910 book Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods by William T. Cox. Good old Billy T. Cox. The book states,
"The squonk is of a very retiring disposition, generally traveling about at twilight and dusk. Because of its misfitting skin, which is covered in warts and moles, it is always unhappy.
Aww.
Hunters who are good at tracking are able to follow a squonk by its tear-stained trail, for the animal weeps constantly."
Like, I've been there.
Well, see, I feel like you're relating a little bit more.
It's a snail trail of tears that you leave.
Oh, gross.
You. Yeah,
well, anyways, when cornered, an escape seems impossible. Or when surprised and frightened, it may even dissolve itself into tears.
Same.
See, that's sad.
So sad.
Nobody should be that sad.
Well,
I'll be happy. Be happy.
But he gets surprised and frightened, and he hasn't been given the tools. Okay, like, I see a therapist, I take medication, I stay hydrated, go for walks every day. The squonk's not doing these things. He doesn't know how
He's
to
not.
Be proactive.
No, he only goes out at night.
Got this really detrimental self-image because he's not giving himself a chance is the problem.
That's right. And sunlight makes you happy.
It does. It does.
And vitamin D.
And he only comes out at night, so.
Well.
There you go.
I know.
Hanging out with spicy Michaela and saucy Mike.
And all the other nocturnal critters.
That's right.
I guess they don't really need sunlight, huh?
I guess not. They're nocturnal critters, like me.
Wow. They need the moonlight.
Later retellings elaborate a little more, saying that squonks traveled slowest, or not at all, on moonlit nights to avoid catching a glimpse of their ugly reflection illuminated in a body of water.
Those poor things. You shouldn't feel so bad about yourself. Be proud of who you are.
Right? Like, I might see myself and then I'll fucking die because I'll just melt into my own tears. Like, come on, guys. Find some therapy. Talk it out. You know, take an inventory of, like, the people and squonks who love you.
Right? What about them?
What about them? If you're a squonk out there and you're listening to this and you're, like, afraid, write us, creepytapas@gmail.com. Let us know. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll tell you you're pretty.
Yeah, you're beautiful. Hunters looking to catch one of these guys supposedly have their best shot on frosty moonlit nights. Although it's probably not super difficult since most accounts describe them as slow and kind of dumb.
Bum bum.
Oh.
These poor little guys.
And despite them being kind of slow and kind of dumb and kind of ugly and warty and, you know, sloppy, they're notoriously difficult to claim as a hunting prize. So
they're hard to catch.
Multiple accounts, however, tell of individuals who have successfully caught one. And then they check their sacks later, their little squonk kidnapping sack, you know. They find out that the squonk cried so hard that it blubbered itself into a pubble. A pubble. And it cried itself to damn old just wetness.
Yeah, okay. And I don't imagine that it comes back from that.
No, I think that's it.
But essentially sacrifices itself whenever it gets scared. It's like, fuck it, I'm done. And like cries till it dies.
Oh, and then you can't prove that you had it.
No, because you just have a wet ass sack.
Wow, that's sad.
Out of context, that is such a weird thing.
If someone ever brings you just a wet sack, you know what it was.
It was a squonk.
It surely was.
It was a squonk.
Well, if you feel like celebrating these ugly, depressed little creatures, you can. Every August in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, there is a big festival to honor the squonk. Squonkapalooza is an all-ages festival celebrating the squonk and other creatures of Appalachian folklore and cryptozoology. That's pretty rad.
That poor little guy.
No.
I know, I just kind of feel bad for him.
I know, me too. I love him so much, though. Yeah, he, like, I want to check in on him. Like, I really want to go, like, find all the squonks and just be like, hey, friend.
I know, don't be so sad. Don't be so self-conscious.
You know, guys.
All you squonks look the same.
Yeah.
It's not like one of you is prettier than the other.
Whatever.
Band together.
That's right. I'm sure in a group, they are formidable.
See? I mean, there's power in numbers. Come on,
there
guys.
There surely is, yes. And, you know, if you're a human listening to this, don't go get a squonk kidnapping sack. Like, that's horrible. Don't put a squonk in it. Like, if you see one, if you're lucky enough to see one, just
leave it
document
alone.
That you saw it. Observe it from afar. Tell it it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Go up to it and be like, hey, sexy, can I get you a drink?
What up? What you doing later?
I really like your style.
Maybe not that.
And the squonk is like, yeah. You want to watch Netflix in my place later?
I don't know. He'd probably just start crawling in.
Well, you're not going to watch anything sad with him. You got to watch, like, I don't know, a comedy.
Okay. Well, you're...
He experiences emotions very, like, deeply and passionately. So I feel like the squonk would actually be a great lover.
Oh,
maybe
my God.
The best out of all the cryptids.
You have went way off base with this.
Well, I'm just saying that he feels emotions very deeply. I'm not saying sex, you creep. I mean, like, a paramour, like a partner, like somebody who you could... You're the one who just made it sex. I'm not talking about fucking a squonk. I'm talking about having one as a partner. They love so deeply. They take good care of your feelings and your heart because they're so sensitive themselves. They would have that empathy. They'd be like, well, I don't want to hurt your feelings because you might, you know, cry yourself into a puddle.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
However, the original phrasing by calling them a lover.
Oh, sorry, I thought we weren't doing phrasing anymore.
Oh, no, phrasing.
Hi, I'm Alana.
I'm Kelsey.
And we're from Castles and Cryptids. And today I'm going to tell Kelsey all about the Scottish cryptid called the Nucklavee.
Very excited.
I have to say, this is one of my favorite cryptids I've ever come across. It just is super metal looking. It's really cool and creepy. It's from... I think it's called Orcadian folklore, which means it's from the Orkneys, which is the Orkneys are islands off the northern coast of Scotland. So it's like in these remote islands, but it lives in the salt water, the cold Atlantic salt water. And its name is said to mean devil of the sea. That's kind of cool. And this devil of the sea is a later corruption of the Orcadian name, I think it's Nucklavee, just by how it's spelled. But it's like with a G instead of this one, which looks more like knuckle, right? Knuckle.
Yeah, I can see why it would involve knuckles. It's very creepy. I don't.
Yes. So I will describe it in just a moment for you guys to get a good picture. In summer months, it's kept at bay, like literally, by this goddess known as Mither of the Sea. So like Mother of the Sea. and it has toxic breath that can wither crops, cause drought and even disease and plague in livestock and humans. The only defense against them really is their hatred of one specific smell, which is the smell of burning seaweed to create kelp. That's okay. What it hates.
Weird.
So, yes, they could be said to resemble a sort of, you might say, a headless horseman, if maybe instead of it being headless, it was skinless and had a grotesque head, and the horse head also had one giant single red eye.
Yeah, it reminds me of the, I don't know if it ever went into the U.S., it was a big thing in Canada here for a long time, the Body Worlds exhibit. That would go around and that showed like human musculature and ligaments and everything. And then they also had animals like horses, just like this, that you could see basically what they would look like without skin.
I didn't know they had horses. Yeah.
I remember them having a horse and I think maybe a couple other animals, not too many, but... Ooh. Very
it's
creepy.
Like actual donated bodies, which is also pretty grotesque.
Most of the stuff, what it actually is, I guess they do like cross sections. Those are the real bodies. Everything else that's on display is models that they took. So they would have like a body donated. They would do whatever they needed to, like probably skin it and like do that kind of stuff, and then they would take molds and then they would make them like out of plasticine or whatever.
Because that would
some of it is bodies, the rest of it is like molds of bodies that were made from bodies that were like donated, I guess. But it's still very creepy.
That's interesting. That's this very much is that look. It's just missing the skin. It's got all the muscles, everything.
Mm-hmm. So creepy. Very visible. I don't like it.
Here's a description from a site all about the folklore of the Orkney Islands. And it says, from the few recorded descriptions of the Nuklavi, we learn that his head was similar to that of a man, only 10 times larger. He had an incredibly wide mouth that jutted out like a pig's snout and a single red eye that burned with a red flame. Hairless, his body was also skinless, its entire surface appearing like raw and living flesh. It was said that his thick black blood could be seen coursing through his veins as his sinewy muscles writhed with every movement he made. His long, ape-like arms hung down to the ground, and from his gaping mouth spewed a foul, black reek.
Gross. Yeah. I see the knuckles dragging on the ground.
I mean, of course this is the place in the world, like, you know, Celtic folklore is where, like, Halloween was birthed from, because, like, their cryptids are just so extra. They're always, like, horse creatures that can kill you and are super awful. And it just concluded with, all in all, not a pleasant sight to encounter on some lonely stretch of coastline. If it's not clear, the creature is like merged at the point of its joining, like sort of a sinister Siamese twin. I don't know,
I didn't notice that at first. I thought it did have legs and still looked like a person with long arms sitting on a horse, but I realized after, no, he doesn't have legs. He's just a torso with arms and a head on the back of a horse.
Yeah, so like almost like a centaur, but no, it's kind of just like a man's torso jutting out from the back of a horse. it's funny. Some sources says he's a large head on two small arms. I don't know if that means he has no torso, but that sounds even worse. The only thing they hate really is that seaweed. That's the one thing you can do to kind of get rid of them. And they would always gather the seaweed from the shores and lay it up to dry above the high water mark. And then they would like burn it in stone-lined pits until they ended up with this white powdery kelp. And its ash was always rich in nutrients and used as fertilizer, so that's probably why they were burning it. But also the folklore said that he hated the smell of this burning it, and he becomes so enraged if he smells it. And he takes out his wrath on whole herds of cattle, either herds of cattle or the horses of Stronze seem to be his two particular targets. Yeah. Like those horses in particular, he's like, fuck you. So, and Stronze happened to be the island where kelp had first been burned in the Orkneys, so that may be why. And then when kelp was burned anywhere in the Orkneys, the horses on Stronze would be afflicted with a strange disease called Mortachine, from there where it would spread all through the isles. So that kind of sucks, but there's one more thing that it hates, actually. You have one more trick up your sleeve. It hates fresh water.
Okay.
I guess because it lives in salt water, you know? Fresh water is like its kryptonite.
Weird.
Yeah. So you can definitely use this to your advantage. Some advice. If one is chasing you, simply cross a stream, and much like some vampire lore, I think it's just unable to follow you across the water.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't go across like still water or moving water sometimes. There's like
running water, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And it's incapable of being on land at all when it's raining. So like go out and jump in those puddles because you're safe when there's fresh water coming from the skies.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely that's good to keep in mind because they are totally evil and malevolent. They're not your tricksters. They exist simply to plague the lives of the people that live in the area. And it said, were it not for Mither of the Sea in the summer and like the rains in the winter, that they would have been driven out of the land long ago.
Wow.
Yeah. This is a story called Tammas and the Nuklavi. So it goes like this. Tammas, like his namesake, Tam O'Shanter, which is from a poem called Tam O'Shanter by Robert Burns about a dude named Tam who meets a coven of witches. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
Scottish poets, I mean. All right. Tammas, like his namesake, Tam O'Shanter, was out late one night. It was, though moonless, a fine starlit night. Tammas's road lay close by the seashore, and as he entered a part of the road that was hemmed in on one side by the sea and on the other by a deep freshwater lock, he saw some huge object in front of and moving towards him. What was he to do? He was sure it was no earthly thing that was steadily coming towards him. He could not go to either side, and to turn his back to an evil thing he had heard was the most dangerous position of all. So Tammy said to himself, "The Lord be aboot me, and take care of me, as I am out on no evil intent this night." Tammy was always regarded as rough and foolhardy. Anyway, he determined, as the best of two evils, to face the foe, and so walked resolutely, yet slowly, forward. He soon discovered to his horror that the gruesome creature approaching him was none other than the dreaded Nuklavi, the most cruel and malignant of all uncanny beings that trouble mankind. The lower part of this terrible monster, as seen by Tammy, was like a great horse, with flappers like fins about its legs, with a mouth as wide as a whale's, from which came breath like steam from a brewing kettle. He had but one eye, and that as red as fire. On him sat, or rather seemed to grow from his back, a huge man with no legs and arms that reached nearly to the ground. His head was as big as a clue of Simmons. Don't know what that means, sorry. And this huge head kept rolling from one shoulder to the other as if it meant to tumble off. But what to Tammy appeared most horrible of all was that the monster was skinless, this utter want of skin adding much to the terrific appearance of the creature's naked body. The whole surface of it showing only red, raw flesh, in which Tammy saw blood, black as tar, running through yellow veins and great white sinews, thick as horse tethers.
Gross.
Twisting, stretching, and contracting, as the monster moved. Tammy went slowly on in mortal terror, his hair on end, a cold sensation like a film of ice between his scalp and his skull, and a cold sweat bursting from every pore. But he knew it was useless to flee, and he said if he had to die, he would rather see who killed him than die with his back to the foe. In all his terror, Tammy remembered what he had heard of Nuklevi's dislike of fresh water, and therefore took that side of the road nearest to the lock. The awful moment came when the lower head of the monster got abreast of Tammy. The mouth of the monster yawned like a bottomless pit. Tammy found its hot breath like fire on his face. The long arms were stretched out to seize the unhappy man. To avoid, if possible, the monster's clutch, Tammy swerved as near he could to the lock. In doing so, one of his feet went into the lock, splashing up some water on the foreleg of the monster, whereat the horse gave a snort like thunder and shied over to the other side of the road, and Tammy felt the wind of Nuklevi's clutches as he narrowly escaped the monster's grip. Tammy saw his opportunity and ran with all his might, and sore need had he to run, for Nuklevi had turned and was galloping after him and bellowing with a sound like the roaring of the sea. In front of Tammy lay a rivulet through which the surplus water of the lock found its way to the sea, and Tammy knew if he could only cross the running water, he was safe, so he strained every nerve. As he reached the near bank, another clutch was made at him by the long arms. Tammy made a desperate spring and reached the other side, leaving his bonnet in the monster's clutches. Nuklevi gave a wild, unearthly yell of disappointed rage as Tammy fell senseless on the safe side of the water. And that was the tale of Tammis and the Nuklevi.
Escape, narrow escape there, right at the end.
Oh, narrowly escaped the Nuklevi.
Yeah. Oh,
be shitting my pants.
Yeah, it looks really creepy. I don't like it.
Yeah. It's definitely worthy of the Castles and Cryptids name.
Yes, for sure.
All right, and hopefully worthy of this lovely Halloween episode. So catch you next time. Keep it cryptic.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
Halloween, it's right around the corner, and by that I mean tomorrow. Spooky friend, I'm Keely, the host of Misty Mysteries podcast. It's a podcast that covers both true crime and paranormal topics, focusing on historical and unsolved crimes. And today, on Halloween Eve, I am helping fill this monster-filled episode with the California creature, the Fresno Nightcrawler. Jumping back to November 5th, 2007, a man named Jose had just had an awful experience with people stealing items from his property. In order to get some comfort and hopefully catch the people if they come back, he had set up cameras. One camera was in the driveway and the other was near his front door. Being an older surveillance system, it would record directly to a VHS system connected to a monitor near Jose's bed. On the night of November 5th, Jose's dog started to bark at something in the front yard. On edge from the thefts, he took the opportunity to use his new system and rushed to his room to see what was happening in his front yard. This is when he witnessed an odd creature moving across his front yard. The creature was short at only 3'9", and most of its body was made up of leg with no visible head or arms. It was extremely thin and wobbly. To me, it looked like a pair of walking white, stretchy, high-waisted bell bottoms. It also reminds me a bit of art from Monsters University, the purple fuzzy leg monster, or most recently, people have found that the creature is similar to the characters from the Among Us game. Jose, who was seeing this creature in real time, was so confused by what he just saw, he ran to wake his sleeping brother so he could see it too. Jose's brother tried looking out the front curtains but didn't see anything. Together, they woke up the rest of his family to review what Jose just saw on the surveillance system. And because they knew they would lose this when they went back, Jose pulled out a camera to record the screen, and this is when they all saw what he had just saw. A strange creature we now know as the Fresno Nightcrawler walking across the front yard. A paranormal investigator, Victor Camacho, who first took on this case, claims that the night this happened, Jose's brother went outside and found a small footprint on the tile that they had laid in the front yard. Jose was terrified after seeing what he saw for 2 weeks after he refused to leave his home. In order to help Jose leave his home again, his family contacted a local Spanish-speaking TV station called Univision to help get some answers. This station then contacted Victor Camacho, a paranormal investigator and host of a Spanish-speaking paranormal radio show that talked about paranormal encounters and cryptids in Mexico and America called Los Desvelados in December of 2007. The station was hoping Victor could help them turn this footage into an alien story, but unfortunately the initial footage was just too bad of a quality and nothing could be done till February of 2008 when Jose was finally ready to talk about what he experienced. After Jose reached out, Victor was able to come to Jose's home where he was able to talk to the neighbors and his family. He was able to get an interview with Jose and the family members that were involved in this sighting. He was even able to bring in a team who was able to recover the original video from Jose's direct system, which is the video we can see today. And obviously throughout time, others have tried to improve its quality, so there are many other videos out there. After his experiences with Jose and his family, Victor felt like he could say this was a real encounter Jose had. Sadly, Jose passed away in a car accident by the time Victor tried to reach out again to revisit the encounter, but the claims and the footage of the Fresno Nightcrawler has not stopped. Only a short time later, in 2011, security at Yosemite National Park installed cameras in an effort to find people who had been vandalizing the park. Instead of vandals, though, the security cameras picked up on some of the best footage we have of the Fresno Nightcrawlers. In this video, there are two of these nightcrawlers walking across the park, but unlike Jose's nightcrawlers, these nightcrawlers looked almost as if they were drunk people trying to get home from the bar, just trying not to fall with every single step they took. Since 2007 and 2011, many have claimed to have encounters with Fresno nightcrawlers, some even saying that the creatures would run at them. In 2017, a man in Poland claimed to have an encounter with a nightcrawler, and in 2020, a couple in Billings, Montana, released footage from their home's camera, but these claims don't seem to be as valid as the original two videos, and they are often ignored by fans of the Fresno Nightcrawlers. Since the original video took over the internet, paranormal shows, and even the news, the Nightcrawlers have become a beloved cryptid of California. So beloved that you can find plushies of Fresno Nightcrawlers, little trinkets, and clothes with pictures of them. They have also been depicted in horror games and the subjects of heavy investigations from those trying to find out if the cryptids are a hoax. Before I leave you to hear about other creepy monsters, just a few things people believe the Fresno Nightcrawler may be is a new species of primates, deers standing on their two hoofs, actual pants on a wire, a bird like a crane just walking, a person walking in big pants and a stilt. But my favorite as a believer is that they are cute but also creepy aliens. And if we're getting spooky for Halloween, who doesn't love a good alien encounter?
Sup, creeps. This is Noelle, the resident weirdo Wisconsinite of Creepy Confidential. I open case files on my favorite cryptids, cults, conspiracies, and otherworldly creepy. Join me today as I take you on a journey of one of the most famous and sometimes feared cryptids of the world. Mothman. November 16th, 1966, Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Mary Millette are out cruising in Roger's black 1957 Chevy to a location known as the TNT area. This area is a local hangout spot and a place known for people to drag race and show off their cars. The two couples are driving along next to the North Power Plant when all of a sudden they notice two bright, glowing red eyes that reflect in the car's headlights. It was then that they noticed these glowing red orbs belonged to a creature. A tall, winged, man-like humanoid creature appears to be moving around the side of the building. The creature appears to be wobbling but not running around the building's perimeter. Linda would later describe the body as 6 to 7 feet tall, half man, half creature, with muscular legs. The creature also appeared to have large wings tucked behind its back. Frightened, they take off towards Route 62. Linda shouting from the back to hurry. Roger accelerates around the bend. They all look up just in time to see the winged creature by a large billboard as it spreads its wings and takes off straight into the air. Completely terrified, they are all screaming at each other, "Faster, faster!" As they see the creature come into focus, swooping and swaying through the back window behind the roaring Chevy as they accelerate down the dirt road. They accelerate to speeds of over 100 miles per hour, and they could not outrun it. They hear the sound of wings scraping on the metal as they drive as fast as they can down the dirt road. Mary would later state she could hear sounds resembling a mouse squeaking during the encounter. Eventually, they sped away from this creature as they reach the end of Point Pleasant. Suddenly, the creature disappears into a field as they flee into town. When they reach town, they stopped at a local convenience store trying to laugh off what had happened. But Linda suggested that they go to the police. A brief thought was to return to the site to see if the creature was still there. However, with much too collective fear, they decided not to go back. They drove back into town and gave their story to the local sheriff. At first, the sheriff didn't believe them, but he knew that they weren't troublemakers. He took their story down, and then they all went back out to the TNT area together. The story goes that while they found no Mothman, the sheriff did hear odd sounds and strange static disturbances coming from his police radio. The witnesses said they saw circling shadows and a cloud of dust kick up in the adjacent coal yard. Too scared to go home, they all stayed in Scarberry's trailer that night. Lights on, and no sleep was had by not a single person in the party. The next day, the sheriff held a press conference, and the paper started to print their stories. Two local newspapers published the first major headlines. The first headline read, "Couple see man-sized bird, creature, something." While another local headline read, "Winged, red-eyed thing chases point couples across countryside." The publication would become the start of one of West Virginia's most well-known cryptids. In fact, one of the most recognizable cryptids of the United States. Mothman. What's wild is this incredible instance with the racing 57 Chevy is not the first sighting of the famous Mothman. 3 days earlier, on November 12th, 1966, in Clendenin, West Virginia, near the Elk River Trail, Kenneth Duncan was digging a grave for his father-in-law with four other individuals. While digging, they spotted something strange. Glancing up from their work, they noticed something huge soaring over their heads. A human-like figure flew out of some surrounding woods and glided over their heads. We need to discuss this TNT area in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The area was originally used for making ammunition during World War II. By the 60s, it was just an abandoned area. However, these contaminants were seeping into the ground. Not only that, but an abandoned power plant was also nearby. Additionally noteworthy is that in 1979, the wildlife area fishermen reported red water seepage at the site of the residual contaminants from the TNT and DNT areas. Could it be that this once toxic area became abandoned and then fueled by the energy produced by a local power plant could have created this creature? Time marched forward from the initial sighting. November 15th, 1967, tragedy strikes again in Point Pleasant. the Silver Bridge collapsed under the weight of rush hour traffic going over the Ohio River. 46 people died that day, and 2 people were never found. The collapse was caused by the failure of a single eye bar in the suspension chain. Some say on the fateful day, Mothman was spotted nearby. The speculation is that he was either a harbinger of impending death or that he caused the collapse. Also, something to note was on that day prior to the incident, paranormal activity apparently spiked. Potential UFO sightings and an individual now known as Indrid Cold, aka the Smiling Man, appeared for the first time in noted history. Poltergeists and bizarre light phenomenon also happened right before the bridge collapsed. Was he a warning or the cause? Since the chase in the 1957 Chevy, there have been many other sightings that should be noted. He has been spotted before Chernobyl, the 9/11 tragedy, the interstate bridge collapse in Minnesota, and before the swine flu outbreak in Mexico. Next time you are exploring the wondrous woods of West Virginia, if you see a pair of glowing red eyes in the forests, it might just be the Great Mothman.
Hi guys, I'm Courtney, host of the Book of the Dead podcast, a true crime podcast that focuses on lesser known crimes. Today I have for you a different story, a legend that has endured in New Jersey for hundreds of years. A story that some believe is pure fact and others believe is pure fiction. This is the story of the Jersey Devil. According to legend, in 1735, a Pines resident known as Mother Leeds found herself pregnant for the 13th time. The Leeds family was not a wealthy family, exacerbated by the fact that Mother Leeds' husband was a known alcoholic and drank the family's money away. Pushed to the point of exasperation to be found pregnant again, she cursed this child to the heavens, proclaiming, "Let this one be a devil." Mother Leeds would soon forget about the curse she placed upon her child, but the powers that be did not. Mother Leeds finally went into labor a few months later on a very, very stormy night with tumultuous weather. Her children and her husband secluded themselves in a separate room, giving her privacy as she labored with her midwives. According to legend, the birth went smoothly and she delivered a happy, healthy baby. But things would not stay like that. Within minutes of being born, Mother Leeds' wish came to fruition. The baby started to change, morphing into an abomination straight from the depths of hell. The crying baby began growing at an alarming rate. Horns grew from its head, talon-like claws burst from the tips of its fingers, leathery wings sprang from his back, and thick black hair and feathers consumed his body. Its eyes glowed red, and this monstrous creature's head began to change into that of a horse. His legs elongated and grew hooves, and once the transformation was complete, this monstrous being savagely attacked his own mother, then turned its attention to the rest of the horrified midwives, and attacked them as well, leaving no survivors. The monster burst through the door of the next room where its own father and siblings were, and to their horror, it attacked them as well, maiming some, killing others, before letting out a terrifying cry and flying up into the chimney. It destroyed everything in its wake, leaving a pile of destruction. It destroyed everything in its wake as it made its escape, terrifying the residents of the Pine Barren that managed to escape. To this day, the creature that has gone by different names over the years, such as the Leeds Devil and the Jersey Devil, claims the Pine Barrens as its own and terrorizes anybody who is unfortunate enough to cross its path. Since the 18th century, residents have reported unearthly wails emanating from the forests and bogs, and how their farm animals would be left slaughtered in the morning with no apparent cause. Some say the Jersey Devil's reach is even farther than the Pine Barrens, with reports of attacks in Camden and Philadelphia. And even as recently as the 1900s, residents from all over have reported seeing this terrifying creature, with it allegedly going on a rampage in January of 1909. But since that rampage, no one has reported seeing it since, at least not to that degree. But the tale of the Jersey Devil has spread beyond the Pine Barrens and has been embraced by all of New Jersey as the stuff of legend. Some say that the Jersey Devil is very, very real and very dangerous. And there have been reports over the years of encounters with the devil. Some say that they have found strange tracks in the sandy soil of the Pine Barrens. Some say that they are the footprints of a strange bird, or possibly that of a horse that walks on two legs. And every once in a while, there will be a report of a sighting of the Jersey Devil. Some say now that it has the body of a kangaroo, the head of a dog, the face of a horse, massive leathery wings, deer-like antlers, and a reptilian tail with intimidating claws. But whether or not these reports are true doesn't matter, because if the devil is real, one thing is for certain. The devil lurks in New Jersey, and it is here to stay.
Hey, hey, this is Autumn from Autumn's Oddities. Here's an urban legend that's set right down the road from my house, and it hits very close to home. If you've listened to my Tales from the Podcast Host episode, you will immediately see why. The Bluegrass State is big on history, with plenty of local lore and legends mixed in. One of the most infamous and chilling legends in Kentucky that has continued to be passed down through generations is that of the Pope Lick Monster. The Pope Lick Monster, or Goat Man as he's colloquially referred to, is a beast that's part man, part goat, and part sheep. Doesn't add up, but I guess it's thirds, hopefully. He's reported to live beneath a railroad trestle bridge that's over Kentucky's Pope Lick Creek, a location that's seen more than its fair share of tragedy throughout the years. Just outside of Louisville, in eastern Jefferson County, that's the county that I live in, the Norfolk Southern Railroad runs right through the parklands of Floyd Fork, and it's in this particular stretch of trestle that the Pope Lick Monster is said to reside. In most accounts, the Pope Lick Monster, named obviously after the creek below his little trestle, appears as a human-goat hybrid with a grotesquely deformed body of a man. It has powerful fur-covered goat legs, an alabaster-skinned face with an aquiline nose and wide-set eyes. Short, sharp horns protrude from its forehead, nestled in some long, greasy hair that matches the color of the fur on the legs because fashion. It's called fashion, Brandon. Look it up. Numerous urban legends exist about the creature's origins and the method it employs to claim its victims. According to some accounts, the creature uses hypnosis or voice mimicry, I hate that, to lure trespassers to the trestle to their death by oncoming train. Other stories claim the monster jumps down from the trestle and onto the roofs of passing cars. Please don't. Don't involve property. Leave that out of it. Yet other legends tell that it attacks its victims with a blood-stained axe. I haven't heard that one, actually. That was a new one for me. It's also been said that the very sight of the creature is so unsettling that those who see it while walking across the high trestle, they just go ahead and they jump right off. They're like, well, I've seen that, and now I gotta go. I just gotta jump right off this bridge. Other legends explain the creature's origins, including that it is indeed a human-goat hybrid. It was a circus freak, allegedly, who vowed revenge after being mistreated. In another version, the creature escaped after a train derailed on the trestle. This version actually links the Pope Lick Monster to the legend of the ghost train, which has also been sighted on the trestle. Another version claims that the monster is really the twisted reincarnation of a farmer who sacrificed goats in exchange for satanic powers. I was going to say that's like one of the all-time greatest backfires. You're like, I want some power, like some sweet, sweet power. And the devil's like, sure, I'll make you powerful, but you got to be a goat, man. Like, damn it, I should have been more specific with my wish. The Pope Lick Monster is believed by most to exist in the realm of myth and legend. I personally know several people who have had encounters with it. I have not myself, but I also am not going to go down and like call it out on its own trestle. That's disrespectful, and I would understand whatever reaction it had. The infamous Pope Lick train trestle has become a favorite spot for kids. It's very unfortunate, especially those conducting bravery tests when someone dares them to climb the trestle. And this has not always ended well, as you can imagine. There's a misconception that the Pope Lick trestle is abandoned and no longer in use, when in reality, the bridge carries a major rail artery into Louisville. Heavy freight trains cross the bridge several times a day, making it far too easy for someone to get caught atop it while an oncoming train barrels down. Several people have died on or near the train trestle at Pope Creek in pursuit of the Pope Lick Monster legend. In 1988, 17-year-old Jack J.C. Charles Baum II was hit and killed by a train, and another young man was injured while trying to cross the trestle. In 1994, a man was killed by a train after his ATV overturned on the trestle, trapping him on the track. In 2000, a 19-year-old fell to his death after encountering a train. And on April 23rd, 2016, a 26-year-old tourist named Raquel, she was from Ohio, died after being hit by a train while searching for the monster. And her boyfriend survived by hanging on the side of a trestle. And if that wasn't true, I would be like, that's a movie that's like gone too far. On May 26, 2019, Savannah Bright was pronounced dead at the scene after she and another teenage girl were on the tracks near the Pope Lick trestle. Her unidentified companion was taken to University of Louisville Hospital. The monster was the subject of a 1988 film by Louisville filmmaker Ron Schildknecht called The Legend of the Pope Lick Monster. The 16-minute, $6,000 film, yeah, it's a decent budget, premiered on December 29th, 1988. Most of the film was shot at the Pope Lick trestle, but scenes showing characters up on the trestle were shot on another location where trains weren't coming through all the time and where you weren't like high up in the air and have to hang off the side of a bridge to escape a train. Norfolk Southern Railway, or Norfolk, I don't really know how you say it. Officials, I don't really care. Again, listen to Tales from the Podcast episode. I don't like this railway for a reason. They say they were very upset about the film as they thought it would encourage dark tourists to visit the trestles. They found one scene in particular very misleading and dangerous. In the scene, the main character, a high school student, narrowly escapes an approaching train by hanging off the side of the trestle. In reality, you have to be pretty freaking strong to hang on for the 5 to 7 minutes it takes for a long train to clear the 772-foot or 235-meter trestle. The tourist boyfriend from Ohio, he was able to do it, but I don't know. He must have been pretty freaking strong, or the adrenaline was really going. In addition to the vibrations from the train that are so strong, the ground beneath the trestle shakes as the train passes. So, I mean, you have to be super freaking strong to hold on. And even if you were, it's not to say that the vibrations from this massive freaking train wouldn't just knock you off of it. If you live nearby, like I do, don't be tempted to see the Goat Man for yourself. Norfolk Southern Railway has urged citizens not to climb the trestle, threatening trespassers with the rest. But if you really want to see if he's real, the safest option is to just drive under the bridge. You know, if you don't care about your car getting a dent in it. There's a street that runs right underneath it, and many eyewitnesses have claimed that the monster has jumped on their car or chased them away. While the legend is kind of fun to talk about, it's kind of fun, it's kind of sad, I absolutely do not recommend putting yourself in danger to see for yourself if this legend is true. I certainly won't be, and I live really close by. I just don't mess with things like that, you know what I mean? I love to talk about it, but I'm not like, hey, I'm gonna go see if this thing that is, you know, a monster and pissed off is real. I'm gonna go to its home and like taunt it. It's not a good idea. I'm not going to do it. I recommend you don't either, but we can still talk about it and, you know, have fun with it. Well, I appreciate you listening. And remember, if it's creepy and weird, you'll find it here.
Thank you for joining us for Darkcast Network's Wicked Week. Tomorrow will be our final installment, Halloween Traditions. I'm Jackie Moranti from Cause of Death 100 Seconds to Midnight, a Darkcast Network production. Darkcast Network, the best of dark indie podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Paranormal Peeps podcast. You can find us on social media at Twitter at CPR Paranormal, on Facebook at Paranormal Peeps Podcast and Cold Spot Paranormal Research. And you can find us on Instagram at Cold Spot _Paranormal _Research.